Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, October 1st, 2017. The share ID numbers for Friday, September 29th, are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 10487. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 10489. Today, A Vision for You presents From Darkness to Light. The promise of the 12-step process is one of a spiritual awakening. Awakening suggests a gradual change. We are changed in the way we think, the way we feel, and especially in the way we behave. A spiritual awakening is much like a dimmer switch, gradual. One click at a time, the light of our lives gets brighter and brighter as a result of the spiritual process of the 12 steps. However, the Big Book makes it clear, we are recovered, not cured. The darkness descends if we rest on our laurels. The dimmer switch goes down one click at a time, very subtly, and then we find ourselves in the darkness. Sometimes we think about relapse as taking place at that exact moment when we return to our binge foods. Actually, relapse is a process that precedes that first bite. Relapse is a series of events that contribute to the breakdown of our recovery and that leads us back into the disease. Nonetheless, every breakdown is an opportunity for a breakthrough. The foundation of this spiritual process is having a spiritual experience of powerlessness. The program of recovery can free us from the darkness of compulsive overeating and enable us to stand in the sunlight at last. Joining us this morning is Katie S., a recovered compulsive overeater from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and she's here to share her experience, strength, and hope with all of us today. Welcome to the line, Katie S.
Thank you, Leah, and thank you, everyone on the line. I always like to start any type of talk like this with the third step prayer because it really helps push out self and let God speak through me, which is helpful, to say the least. So, God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May do Thy will always. So to get started here, I'm just going to give you a little background. And so I am 35. I've been in program since February of 2011. I am a bulimic and compulsive overeater, although I usually identify as a food addict because it just seems to fit the best with how I respond. So what I'm going to attempt to do here with God's help is to tell you a little bit about my story, what happened to get me to a recovered state, the fact that I was recovered for 2.5 years and relapsed, and that I'm currently recovered again. I've been abstinent for over a year. I didn't think that that would happen for me. I had a lot of guilt about having had freedom and throwing it away, but I was surprised that the process worked again, and I've been given the gift of a recovered life. So my pre-recovered experience, the first year and a half of OA, is pretty well described in the chapter More About Alcoholism. I was unwilling to admit that I was a real compulsive overeater. I tried every form of abstinence besides giving up my binge foods, only binging alone, never having binge foods in the house, only binging when I went out, only organic binge foods, more exercise, inspirational books, you get it. And my story, it also paralleled Jim's story. I would have high resolve, have made a plan with my sponsor, was clear on the fact that if I started in on compulsive eating, that it was not going to end well, but the idea to pick up would sneak in like a whisper. I would convince myself that it was going to be okay and that I could participate in family activities or friend celebrations, and there I was by the end of the night, totally defeated, and usually unwilling to get back to abstinence for a while. So they also talk about going out deliberately to get drunk, and this was me to a T. I would feel justified by my anger or anxiety or depression to pick up, and I would with a vengeance, but like they all say here, it was insanely insufficient when compared with the pain and destruction to my life, that the coping relief that I got from picking up just for that evening or however long it ended up trailing off, it wasn't actually worth. I used to say, like, whatever I thought that I was signing up for, the disease had more in store for me. I would think that I'm not going to binge for the holiday or the weekend or maybe even the vacation, and then it would be weeks, months, and early on years. I mean, I've been messing around with addiction for as long as I can remember, seriously, since I was about 15 or 16. So my disease progressed in the room. I could white knuckle it for a few weeks and maybe get a 30 or 60 day coin from time to time, but my binges were becoming increasingly more violent and scary. I would come into the rooms crying and swear that this time it was enough pain to straighten me out, but just like the jaywalker, I was back at it, usually by the next day or within a week. So, like I said, that went on for a year and a half until the fall of 2012. And after a particularly bad binge that involved alcohol, I had a crossroads moment. So with this binge, my boyfriend, possibly fiance at that time, were hanging out and decided to have a couple beers and eat some food and whatever was going to go on, and then he went to bed like normal people do. Like, okay, we hung out, he went to bed. I stayed up, finished everything that was in the house, felt really confident about my driving ability, and went to all of the fast food restaurants like near our, in our neighborhood, and then binged and purged in a public parking lot, went to the next neighborhood over, got food from a 24-hour grocery store and came home and did it again. So it was a bad one. It was a really bad experience. And I woke up the next morning with that, the four horsemen, the terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. They were absolute upon me. And I was just shaking back and forth, and I couldn't believe what I had done. Like, I couldn't believe that I had taken his car without asking, while I was like feeling really hopeless. And the crossroads moment was seeing, I was gifted a vision of what my life and ultimate death was going to look like if I continued on the path of addiction that I had been walking for years. And I knew where it went. Ruined relationships, uncontrollable binges, uncontrollable weight gain, spending money I don't have, the disgusted and exhausted faces of my family, and unmanageable pain. Just intense. And then there was this other path. And it was a path of recovery and spiritual help that I didn't know where it was going to go. It really scared me. It was the unknown. It was something that, honestly, when I came into the rooms, the God talk really turned me off. I didn't know. I was hoping there was a way to do the program without it. I was hoping there was a way to just, like, get through it without going that way. And for me, there wasn't. For me, that it didn't look that way. I just had to get to that moment of, oh gosh, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to ruin everything. There won't be any husband, job, none of it. None of that will happen. So I'm going to start going this other way. And my sponsor at the time suggested that I do a 90 meetings in 90 days. And part of that was phone meetings. And, you know, I'd say it was like a week or so in that I found, cue the angel noises, like, a vision for you. And when I first heard it, I was blown away. I just couldn't believe that there were other people who were having the same experience to food that I was. They were talking about having extreme reactions to certain substances, and how they were describing this. First of all, I hadn't really heard before. Most of what I had heard had been either like, oh, I'm eating some cookies and I feel bad about it, or like or people were having extreme reactions and no solution. But what was amazing about the people who were sharing on A Vision for You was that they weren't doing it anymore. And I just started calling people immediately. Like, what are you doing? What is this? And I remember a friend of mine now, but asked me, if you're allergic to sugar, why are you eating sugar? And I was like, well, what do you mean? Like, sugar's in everything. Like, it really was confusing to me. Like, my idea of eating healthy was like, I'm going to have a granola bar or a chicken with some sauce in that had sugar in it, or I'm going to have yogurt that has sugar in it. And, like, it never occurred to me that, like, I thought I was making these healthy choices, that could contribute to me feeling the reaction, or leading to these other binge where I pick up what I actually knew was, you know, a problem for me, the things that we all know. And so when she said that, I was just like, what is this? Like, I had heard that there were people who abstained from sugar, but honestly, I thought it was just, you know, there was a small group of people, and that's just what they had to do. Like, I didn't recognize that it was like a program. Like, I didn't really know. And that sounds amazing that I was in OA for a year and a half and didn't actually know that, but it's true. So, hold on, let me look at this. So, at that same time, I started going to AA meetings because of that terrible experience I explained to you and how it involved alcohol. And I was listening to Vision, and while in the meeting, there was someone who was sitting across the room, and she was talking about the Big Book, and she was doing a lot of stuff, like collecting money to buy Big Books to take to rehabs and starting up small groups. And she was just doing a lot of service in hospitals and institutions. And I went up to her afterwards and was like, hey, like, I hear you talking about the Big Book, and I'm listening to this meeting and my other program, and I'm really into that. Like, do you think that you could help me with this? Do you think that you could, take me through the steps or whatever it is that we're supposed to be doing? And she was like, yeah, you know, I'm starting up a workshop within the next couple of months, and if you want to get started, I can help you out now, and we can meet up. Here's my number. You know, it was suggested to me to call your sponsor every day for the first 30, 60, 90 days. That's what she told me to do. And I just started doing that. Like, I started calling her. And in the meantime, I had Googled, like, food plans, OA, something along those lines. And I came across this, like, Food Addicts Anonymous food plan. It's really super clean. Like, basically it eliminates any of those foods that could be an allergy for 90%. I'm not promoting it. I'm just saying that that's what I did. And something happened in those few weeks that I, like, had a realization that alcoholics go through such great lengths to not pick up the first drink. They have like all these things that they're doing to not drink alcohol. And I was like, I'm not doing that at all. Like, I'm not going any lengths. I'm eating it. Like, maybe I feel like it's in small amounts or it doesn't count for whatever reason, but I am not going any lengths for my recovery. And I just, something happened that gave me this drive and a path to follow. And so the first thing that I did with this food plan was I went down to my sister's house in rural North Carolina for a couple of weeks and like just had bought the food that I needed and was planning meals while she was at work and making us dinner. And this was like my personal rehab experience where I was separated from all the triggers at my house and I was taking walks outside in nature and just, I was kind of going absolutely insane, to be honest. I was detoxing and just had no idea that I would have such a physical reaction to the substances that I had been attached to. So And also was like listening to A Vision For You all the time. I was listening to recordings, special editions, calling people, trying to just find out more. I was trying to immerse myself as much as possible by what I could do. And so with my AA sponsor, we were going through the big book, and I started to understand what I was dealing with. Like, we talked about the doctor's opinion, the allergy, the mental obsession. I was learning, and there is a solution about this illness of compulsive overeating and how I was defenseless against taking the first bite. And that was, like, different from what I had always heard. I thought, like, you know, I don't have a choice after I take the first bite, but I have a choice if I'm going to. And, like, what I was learning was my experience, that I actually did not have a choice, that it just kept, it kept sneaking in. Like, I could not defend against my own brain. There was nothing that I could do to defend. So, those first three steps happened where I did write out like detailed questions that had been taken strictly like from the big book, but I also just like felt them deeply. Even though I had gone on this little rehab experience to my sister's house, I came back, I still binged on like stevia, pumpkin pie, and other stuff. Like, I could have just like, oh, and then I was free from it and I just didn't think about it anymore. Like, no, I had a real problem and was recognizing like, I am powerless. I can't stay away from this, even though I want to. And there was this other option to move towards a higher power and work the steps. And I made a decision that I was going to do it because mostly because I knew I wasn't, there was no life for me otherwise. There was nothing that was going to be sustainable the way that I live life when I'm not in recovery. And so, We did a thorough four-step. My sponsor was really helpful in that area, too. I had made three columns of, you know, who I was resentful at, why, what it affected in me. And the fourth column, I didn't really get it at first. Like, I just did what she said to do. Like, I just did what she said to do and was looking at my part, was looking at, like, how I had done what I resented to those people in my life, either to them or other people, and where had I been self-seeking, selfish, dishonest, and afraid. But mostly I was going through this process, and it was just like getting out all of this stuff that had been with me for years, putting it on paper. My fifth step was 6 hours long. Like, she was a saint. She was a saint. And then I had a really profound six and seven as well. Part of my six was to go back and read just my part of the inventory. And I had this overwhelming feeling of like, I don't want to be her anymore. Like, how I was treating people, how I was reacting and living in fear, I just didn't want to be her. And I sat in meditation and then said the 7-step prayer, and I kid you not, I could have, when I stood up, I felt like I could have launched over the coffee table. Like, felt like I lost 30 pounds saying a prayer is what it felt like. It was kind of weird. Like, I was like, that was weird. You know, it was an actual event that seemed, whatever, strange. And then I kind of dawdled between 7 and 8, not because of my sponsor was saying, oh, just take a break, but I was felt pretty good from my 7th step, and it was like at least a few weeks that I was messing around, and my sponsor, anytime I tried to say to her, like, oh, well, I'm feeling weird about this, she was very clear that she said the words to me, it sounds like your unmade amends are going to kill you. And she was heavy-handed and like, this is what we do. We made a commitment to go through with the steps, and you've got to make your amends. Like, you might be feeling okay now, but it's not going to fly. And she was there helping me along the way, making my list, and we made cards in the, like, basically index cards with the person's name, what the harm was, where they were, what I was clear about, and then divided them into piles of, like, unwilling and willing. And the one that I did not want to do at all was to my husband. And he turned out to be, like, one of the first ones that I did, because I'm making amends and sitting across the table from him, and it just was the right time. So I make this amends to my husband, and I had such, like, an amazing experience with it, not necessarily because what he said, but just that I finally felt free to be myself, to be honest, to be authentic in my own house. And what happened with that feeling is that it fueled me through the rest of them. I probably had 50 amends to make, and I was setting up appointments and having these cards with me in my purse, doing like 3 to 5 a week. I was on fire doing amends, and I loved it. I had some amazing experiences. But the one that I want to talk about is the one that got me recovered. And so my mom had passed away a few months before I entered program, and I had said a kind of like, and I'm sorry for being a bad kid, something along those lines before she had passed away. And I didn't really know how to do this process or how to take ownership of what actually happens. But my sponsor helped me. I wrote a letter, and I went to her gravesite, which is a really nice place to hang out in the church that I grew up in. And so I read this letter, and part of what I was instructed to do was to, after each amend, ask the other person, do you need to tell me how any of this hurt you personally? Is there any other harm that I'm not aware of that you need to tell me about? And is there anything that I can do to make this right? And when I asked those questions, I heard, like, almost audibly, but within me, very clear, when you hurt yourself, you hurt me, and I don't want you to do that anymore. Of course, I cried and cried and cried. I felt this, like, I felt a presence and love, and it was life-changing. So prior to that, there were many experiences along the way where I felt triggered to eat sugar, to act out. And that very night, the most helpful, useful thing that I could do was to plate cookies on a tray for my friend's wedding and our wedding reception. And I did this as though they were dominoes. I had no attachment. I was neutral, and I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. I had never had that experience to food. I was either absolutely afraid of it or giving in and going nuts with it. And this was a miracle. And over the next, few months, I just continued to work my program, and I was helping a lot of people. So I was instructed to read pages 84 to 88 in the big book, and I did. I honestly hated doing it. It took some time, and it was annoying, but it helped develop what I was supposed to be, how I was supposed to be living. It was written out clearly. And so that was incorporated, and I was sponsoring people in my OA meetings. I started meditating more. My life was beautiful. Things with my husband were amazing. I was sponsoring half of Pittsburgh. I made different ways to connect to God. I was making phone recordings where anything, and I still do this today, when anything makes me nervous or goes on, I just use the phone recording app in my iPhone to say, like, hey, God, this is what's going on. I just talk to God. I just say, like, I'm having anxiety about this. I'm having, this situation at work. And then I listen back to it, and I always hear something that I didn't know, something is revealed, and that experience has been a good way for me to connect. Also writing letters, sometimes having God write back. I can even do that in my phone too. And this is all happening, that was like in 2013, around there. And we were struggling with infertility even back then, but I just had this sense that it was all going to work out and that things were going to be fine. It went on like that, where I was living the program. I was living the big book for a couple of years until around the fall of 2015. And what led up to that was a couple of things. What I can pinpoint most is that my ego is really what brought me down. That for whatever reason, it became like I was doing this. I had this beautiful life. I stopped engaging in a lot of the 11-step meditation stuff, the talking to God. And maybe I was talking to God, but I wasn't taking time to listen, to be patient. And I really just started seeing, instead of me doing 10 and 11 to clear a channel for my higher power to work through me, they became a box to check in order for me to continue living the life that I wanted to and moving towards what I thought my goals were. And, there were external factors, but as I said before, like, they are extremely insufficient when compared to, I'm telling you, I had this beautiful life. Like, yes, we were dealing with infertility. I had gone through multiple rounds of injectable medications. I had had an early miscarriage, which was extremely emotionally painful. I didn't feel like my husband was connecting to the pain of that, like, for him. And I've talked to other women since. It seems pretty common that usually the men, because they don't experience it in the same way, they don't, like, have the same emotional response. And I wanted to move towards adoption. He wasn't ready, and it sprouted a resentment towards the whole process pretty early on. But all of these things were things that when I'm living in recovery, like, I can use my program to get connected to my higher power and walk through them. And what started to happen as I was living life, on Katie's self-will, then these things became just too overwhelming, just too negative. And they started this wedge between my higher power and I, where I felt like there were these things that I wanted out of my life. And my higher power wanted me to go on being a recovered person, just helping other people. And I just started getting super resentful about it. So, yeah, I felt separate, alone. And within a few months, this, like, those things started to happen around September, October. I picked up in early November. The night that I picked up, it happened on the lie that I was done doing all this extra stuff. I was done, you know, weighing and measuring my food and helping everybody else. I was done doing all this extra stuff. And it was separating me from my husband and my family. And I was just going to go eat like everybody else. I mean, sure. I was going to struggle at times, but everybody does. I mean, this is America. Everybody struggles with food, right? And I just, like, had this idea that I was going to be normal. And that's what happens when there's a disconnect from my higher power, that insanity returns. I do believe that I told you guys the story where I am literally throwing up in a parking lot after eating too much food. Like, not a normal person. Not a normal eater, wasn't going back to anything that could remotely even be disguised as, like, oh, yeah, she's has a little weight problem or something. But so that night, my husband and I didn't really even get in a fight. We had some type of talk where I left feeling rejected. I had been praying for him because of the resentment I had. And it was working. That was the thing. It was working. Like, I was feeling all this love to him. And I went to him and expressed all this love to him. And I just felt like he didn't give me what I want. He didn't, like, he wasn't like, oh, I love you too so much. You're great. Like, we both were in a weird place. Like, we had been having miscarriages and disappointments, spending a whole lot of money. We weren't like, oh yeah, life is awesome. Especially whatever. And so we'd had a party that night, actually, and there was food in the house that wouldn't ordinarily be there. Not that, you know, it just wasn't my food. And I went down, got into it, tried to go back upstairs and go to bed. Went downstairs, got into the alcohol, tried to go back upstairs and go to bed. Woke up again and was like, it's on. Like, there's no, I know that I'm not going to bed. And went into the TV room and ended up hanging out with myself all night long, just binging, using. I even, like, got in the car again, went to go get cigarettes, like, it was everything. And my husband comes downstairs around 8 in the morning, and he is like, what's going on here? Like, he had never, I met my husband the same month that I entered program, and, like, yeah, that first year and a half looked bad, but I hid most of it from him. He had never seen me like this at all, and, like, just was like, what? My demeanor, I was a completely different person. That was what was scary to him. He just, my general attitude was not like, oh my God, I can't believe what I did. It was, welcome to your new life. Like, here we are. Like, I'm hanging out, playing video games. How are you doing? Like, I know it's 8 o'clock in the morning. What's up? And we actually had our first couples therapy appointment that morning that I'd set up because of all the stuff we had been going through with infertility. And prior to that, my therapist was like, you know, you're doing really good. Like, I can't actually tell you to do much more than you are. When you do these 10 steps, it's like doing cognitive behavior therapy. When you do these 11 steps, it's like the guided imagery that I'm suggesting and meditation. When you're doing 12 steps, that's like distracting yourself and getting out of, you know, getting out of your own head. And in walks in relapse Katie, and shocked. I mean, she just like, what, who are you? Like, what is this? like, yeah, I was drinking hot chocolate and eating candy and doing whatever, but it was just my demeanor. My husband kept saying, like, you know, her effort meter is just, like, off the charts. Like, she does not care, and I didn't. I didn't care about anything or anyone. And I don't even know if I slept, but that binge went on all weekend. And another thing that I remember so clearly is sitting on the couch and, like, talking to my husband in a very normal voice, like, just how I am now, and saying, like, actually, no, I think this is good. I was really getting too carried away with all that spiritual stuff. I think I was delusional. This is just, like, and as I'm saying it, like, tears are just streaming down my face. Like, tears are just pouring out onto my shirt. And, like, I'm just saying, like, no, this is a good thing. Like, you'll see, everything's good. And he was like, you're crying right now. And I, like, didn't actually realize, like, that it was just happening. And for the next few months, I couldn't follow a food plan to save my life. I full-blown started using nicotine again. And it ended up that most of my relapse looked like eating cheeseburgers and french fries and trying to control my alcohol intake. I would have occasional binges with sugar, but it was mostly this daily drudgery of waking up, using nicotine and caffeine to get me to lunch, overeating at every meal, trying to control my alcohol consumption, because I did to some extent. I would, if I could limit it to like one or two, then like obviously I don't have a problem, everything's okay. Meanwhile, like, the tornado is going crazy in the rest of my life. And then just like numbing out with excessive food or excessive masturbation, whatever I needed to do to feel that chemical change in my brain. It's really hard to pinpoint in my story just one substance, because it's not the kind of addict I am. Like, it's whatever will get me that dopamine response. And it's what the big book talks about, blotting out the consciousness of my intolerable situation. That's what my life looks like. And the bedevilments on page 52 were my everyday existence. They were all true, yet I didn't see a way out. Like, I know it seems strange having lived the solution prior to this, but my general thought was like, well, I had it, and now it's gone, and I can never do it again. Like, I don't. And to some extent, like, the willingness to do any different wasn't there, because those substances were working again. They had ignited something in me that, like, it lit me up, not in the way that, like, God lights you up and then you feel, okay, like, I can face anything. It's like this igniting feeling where your intestines are on fire, but for some reason that feels better than like going out in the cold. Like, it just is not a good, but it when that's happening, I almost will never make the choice of like, yeah, okay, I'm gonna do this hard program to get out of it. Like, it sucks. So anyway, along with that, the soul hole, that dark soul hole, was bigger than ever. I had always felt that before. I remember being a 12-year-old and like pointing to my chest and saying, like, it's right here. Like, something right here feels weird. Like, and if I push on it in this certain way, then, you know, I can kind of make it feel better. But I always had that empty feeling in the center of my chest until I had that experience with my mom at the men's, like, and when that happened, it took away the desire to use. And then in relapse, in getting separated from my higher power, like, feeling that gaping emptiness again was devastating. It was devastating. I was needy and smothering my husband, yet avoiding most other people. And the food just, like I said, it was just getting me by until, like, February of 2016. Picked up the sugar again, went on a bender, was feeling wrecked. I almost haphazardly texted a friend from the line and asked her if she would take me through to work, and she said yes. I binged again that night, and then I put down the food and started working the steps with her within a few days after that. And, like, it wasn't the same type of experience that I had the first time, but I was, like, really surprised that it was working. It was working. I was starting to feel better. I did my fourth step again, and I cleared away the resentments that I had towards my higher power and my husband, and I started to feel that sunlight again. And I just remember feeling grateful because I was still loved. And for whatever reason, I didn't know that when I was in relapse. I just didn't know it. I went through all the steps again. I started working with a few people, but I really wasn't doing 10 and 11. And I don't think that I was actually committing my food either. And ultimately, in the summer of 2016, I relapsed on a vacation to Iceland. There were external factors. No phone reception. My younger sister was a few months pregnant with her first child, and we had just found out another one of our IVFs had failed, like, brought up more resentments. And food was also kind of hard to find there because they have to import everything. But those are all, I mean, the main thing is this separation from higher power. Like, for me, it just happened so quickly. Like, I really only have a day. I really only have a day. And every day I wake up vulnerable to picking up. And I have to do these things to, like, it's like Groundhog's Day. I have to do these things and remember, like, oh, yeah, I'm an addict. Oh, yeah, I need to, you know, commit my food. I need to do the steps. I need to help other people. I need to get connected to God. Like, it's like all these things. I don't know. It's true. So, anyway, within days, I went from just, like, oh, I'm just going to eat bread, to picking up, binging, drinking, smoking within a week. I was in relapse again for another month. And then when I went home, I was totally done with OA. I was ready to quit, just turn in my key to the home group that I attend here, take my chances with bulimia. And that was the best plan that I had. I had no hope of getting out. And I can't remember if someone suggested it to me or if I don't know what brought this about, but right before I was going to quit forever, I just started saying the prayer, God, show me what to do and give me the willingness to do it. And I crawled out of relapse with that. It was like a Saturday, I decided to quit. Sunday, I heard a special edition on this line where my current sponsor told her story, which included multiple miscarriages, and I was emailing her before she even hung up the phone, begging her to help me. She agreed. We started working the steps together. By that Tuesday, I was abstinent and working, and I continued to use that prayer, just, God, show me what to do and give me the willingness to do it. And my sponsor will tell you that I work this program like my hair is on fire. That's what she says. And after a few days of abstinence, it just snowballed that way, where I had this, like, sense. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm going to lose everything. I'm going to lose my husband. I'm going to lose the house. I'm going to lose the job. I'm going to lose, like, everything. It was that realization of, like, oh, my gosh. Like, now I know. Like, when I first went towards that other spiritual option in my crossroads scenario in the beginning, I didn't know what it was. And now I knew, like, there is this other life that I can live. And I am dying over here. I'm going to die. And so it says in To Wives on page 120, this quote here, perhaps your husband will make a fair start on the new basis, but just as things are going beautifully, he dismays you by coming home drunk. If you're satisfied he really wants to get over drinking, you need not be alarmed. Though it is infinitely better to have no relapse at all, as is true with many of our men, it is by no means a bad thing in some cases. Your husband will see that once he see at once that he must redouble his spiritual activities if he expects to survive. And that was true for me. Like, I just had this, like, oh, I really, like, have to live my program every day. Otherwise, I'm going down the other path. And, yeah, so we went through the work using the big book, some other materials as well from Don C., who's done a special edition. He's great. He's one of my heroes. And, when we got to 10, 11, and 12, there was just that sense that, like, I can't mess around with this. Like, I have to do it. And so when I get disturbed about anything, it is imperative that I see that person or circumstance differently. And something I've come to learn along the way in my 10th step is to basically disassemble the sick man's prayer and see myself in that other person. I need to manifest compassion, like, actively. So when doing 10 step, I, go through the first part, who am I resentful at, why, what does it affect in me? And then the other part, which always helps me, like, it's amazing, is that I ask myself, where have I done the same actions, whether it be lied, criticized, betrayed, gossiped, left out, where have I done those actions to the person that I'm resenting or anyone else? And that anyone else is super important because it usually sets off this light bulb moment of, oh, I'm doing that to my other friend, my younger sister, my dog, I don't know. And it's the whole point of the resentment in the first place. Like, I feel as though these resentments that I get, these, like, worries and fears, they're actually just a way for me to see pieces of myself that my ego won't let me see otherwise. And when they're identified in this way, then I can go out and start treating other people differently and with more love and tolerance and patience and kindness, that it's really hard to do until I can see, like, oh, I'm them. They, you know, whenever I've acted like that, it has been out of some kind of fear or not thinking about it. You know, I can just see myself in them. And even if their behavior doesn't change and they're still acting in a way that, it just is like a puppet now. Like, they're just acting. They're just doing whatever it is that they're doing, and I'm neutralized to their behavior. And it's essential. I have to be able to do that, because if I'm reacting to everything as it's going on without this out, there's no way. There's no way that I'm going to be able to live and not freak out. So, you know, then we go through the other things. Where have I been self-seeking? You know, what are the actions that I did, that I've done? Did I gossip, blame them, demonizing them, shunning them? Where have I been selfish? So what's the attitude of, like, I'm right, they're wrong. I basically, my needs are more important than theirs. Like, what's the attitude that I have? And then for dishonesty, this is that lie that I'm telling myself to justify my attitudes and actions on any time that I think that I know what another person's intentions or motives are. I put that here because, you know, well, I'm treating them like this because they are thinking that or did this or, you know, that's all a lie. I have no idea. And everyone's perspective of reality is their own. Like, we've all lived different lives and different experiences. So I learned this most with my husband, who's just like a kind, good person, where there were times that I went to him with some of the delusional lies that I had in my head, and he just laughed. Like, he laughed because they were so far from reality that he couldn't even, like, fathom that I would think that. Like, he laughed, and it just stopped me in my tracks of, like, wow, like, I'm nuts. Totally nuts, and I really need this program. So, okay, and then afraid. Like, these are going to be those core fears that most of us have if we really get down to it. The abandonment, being unloved, being unappreciated, being left out. And I can't do anything with those fears but turn them over to God. Just saying, God, I'm scared about this. I don't know what to do. I need you to remove these fears so that I can be helpful. And then take God's hand and walk through whatever it is, because life's going to change. That's a guarantee that we have. And if we can just go through without picking up and destroying everything around us, like, we will get through it. It will change. I mean, something that I haven't talked about a lot, I also, recovered or not, have suffered from seasonal depression for years. It's just, I have the biological response to less sunlight. And what happens in recovery when that happens is that I believe that spring will come, that I will feel different, and that I can, in today, like, focus on my family, helping other people in recovery, being a good ultrasound tech at my job, and finding my higher power in the world. I still get tired. I get really tired. I get just feeling slow, feeling down, depressed. All of those things are there. My seasonal depression during my relapse was terrifying. I was empty, alone, felt hopeless. There was never going to be an out. A lot of, like, really never and always feelings. I'm always going to feel like this. It's never going to be different. Da, da, da. Like, those, it was so present that it was, using was the only thing that I had to hold on to even get through a moment. And, like, I literally couldn't go more than a few minutes without using something. I mean, it's just how it was. And so today, my 11th step, it doesn't include taking time in the morning to ask God to direct my day, to guide me in what to do. I pray throughout the day. I pray before every meal. When I feel scared and alone, when I feel there's something to be thankful for, I talk to my higher power. I do an evening review. It really helps me see if there's any repeat resentments, and if there are, I pay attention to that and do what I was just talking about in step 10 and start praying. And the big book says that not only is resentment the number one offender, but also that the grouch and this brainstormer, I love that line, dubious luxuries of normal men. So I can be at my job, I can be at a family event, and people around me can gossip and commiserate about things that they feel aren't how they would like it. And that is a luxury I don't have. Like, I can't go there. I usually, if I just try and either redirect or walk away. And it just takes me down too quickly. I have to stay grateful and positive and helpful. And I think I needed to learn that it's not a luxury I have. So what else does this say here? Let me look at my notes. Yes, as far as my 12th step, this can't be fueled by ego anymore. Like, this has to be like, okay, God, who do you want me to help? And what it looks like today is taking people through the work. Usually I have like a few in the beginning, which we're spending a lot of time getting set up and doing the first few steps, then usually less in the active steps, and then people that have gone through that I maintain contact with. And they talk about like developing the fellowship you crave. And I found that in recovery from this meeting and other people that I've met who are committed to living this way of life. Like, I just have to. There's just no other option for someone like me. So Dawn talked about this being a daily treatment plan, and that's how I think about it. I have this chronic, incurable illness that can be arrested one day at a time. But like, if anyone who has a chronic illness just stopped doing their treatment, they would veer towards relapse. And like I said, the Big Book makes clear what our time frame is. Daily reprieve. It's like, it sounds cheap, right? We do all this and we have one day, but it's like the rewards are priceless. I'm active. I smile a lot. I feel helpful most of the time. The soul hole is filled in. I don't have the need to put food, alcohol, or any other substance in its place. I am free to live a life. And that, I'm free to live a life and be happy about it. And that's worth it. That is worth living a life of recovery. And life has its ups and downs. This year, the year that I've been abstinent and back from relapse, we've had 3 miscarriages, 2 failed IVFs, I've watched my best friend, other people in program, younger sister, all get pregnant and have babies, yet with my higher power and all of you, we've stayed abstinent, been able to cry, be honest about those complex emotions. Like, it doesn't mean that I don't have an emotional response, but it can be hard, and I can still love them, have joy for them, and lean in to my higher power, which wasn't really happening before. It was I felt very alone there. And my husband and I are stronger than ever. We've finished the classes to adopt from foster care and are in the final stages of the process before we'll start getting matched with our kids. We're looking to adopt siblings, and I really have no doubt that I'm going to be a good mother to these kids. When we go through the classes, they like, they try and kind of scare you. They don't want you to go into the process and then back out. And the kids that they're describing and the issues that they have, I'm like, that's like me. Like, that is me exactly. So it's like, I am going to get this kid that needs a parent in recovery, like needs someone who can show them a way to live, because they likely have been through a lot of trauma. They have these feelings that they don't know what to deal with. They have these, I don't know if they'll be a compulsive eater or not, like who knows, but I do know that recovery has been kind of a reparenting boot camp for me. And yeah, it was needed. So, yeah, that delusion that I could eat like other people had to be smashed. And if it took a year of relapse to do that, I consider myself lucky. I know there are people who have lost a lot of years of their life or their life in general and not come back. And I know that that's there for me if I choose to not show up here and do the deal every day. And I do it gratefully and happily, even when life's going amazing and everything's coming up Millhouse. And I also do it when I feel pretty crappy and I'm like just needing a hug. Do the program regardless, because that's life. Life's going to keep going on. And yeah, I'm just going to pass. Thank you all so much for listening to my story, for being present and being a part of this. Thanks.
Thank you, Katie, for sharing so much of yourself this morning and for sharing your personal experience and strength and hope and personal insights with all of us. Much, much appreciated. Katie's contact information will be offered at the conclusion of this recording, so stay tuned for that. And we're now going to transition into a Q&A segment. You can ask Katie a question by pressing star 1 to unmute. Please identify yourself, including the first initial of your last name.
Mary Lee R.
Mary Lee R.
Amanda
R.
Michelle,
is that correct?
Oh, yes.
And your first letter, your last name, please, Michelle.
L.
Got it. Anyone else? Okay, let's start with these three. Mary Lee R.
Good morning, Katie. Thank you. I actually have two questions. The first one is, could you describe doing the deal or what your routine looks like? And then I have a 10th step question about how you would work with a resentment about feeling like you're being taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Thanks, Mary Lee. And so doing the deal, I'll just run you through like a day in the life of Katie living a recovered life. So I wake up, I roll out of bed and get on my knees, say the serenity prayer and the third step prayer, go downstairs, do a few other things. I get on my knees again and say the seventh step prayer and another prayer before, say the Lord's Prayer, it's long enough. I say that one before every meal. And then I read a daily meditation book. I have breakfast. I spend some time getting quiet with a notepad and just ask myself, God, I don't ask myself, I ask God, what am I supposed to do today? What do you want me to do? And I like make kind of a to-do list, and God's making this list. There are people and things to do on this list that I wouldn't even think of. They weren't things in the back of my head, oh, yeah, I got to get that done. Some of them are. But other ones are like, call so-and-so. Like, you know, sometimes it's as simple as like, go upstairs, like, look in this room. You know, it's like, I don't know. But I'm listening to what God wants me to do. So then throughout my day, I embark on whatever it is that I need to do, going to work, but also incorporating this list. And throughout the day, when I feel afraid or someone offends me, whatever is going on, I do 10 steps. I like to use there's an OA toolkit app on my phone, but you can use paper, you can use your head if you're already have done it a bunch of times and know how to, but every time I do those, like, I'm always surprised at what I see. Usually if I write it down or type it out, I think that I know what it is that's annoying me, and it's not. Like, every time it's something like, oh, yeah, okay, it has nothing to do with that person. It's really this other situation. So then, yeah, go to work. Like I said, praying before every meal, that's pretty essential for my recovery. Nothing goes in my mouth before I pray. And then come home, hug my dog, take him for a walk. I call sponsees or tell them to give me a call during my commute time. Am helpful to my husband. I make dinner. We have time together where, you know, we're not on our phones. We're sitting at the table. We're, you know, talking about our day. And then usually I just spend the evening with him. If there are other people that I need to talk to, that happens, but mostly that's family time. And then before I go to bed, I say another thank you prayer and do any reading or writing that I need to do. So working with sponsees usually happens on the weekend or via email, and like when I can respond to them. And then, yeah, that's doing the deal for me. It sounds like a lot of things, but it's just become my life, you know? Live my life, go to work, spend time with family, yet interspersed in there is touching base with my higher power, because it can't be me just running full speed at life. And then 10 steps for if we feel like we're being taken advantage of, and that's one that I can really relate to, and maybe we can talk about it more off the line. Like, maybe I can kind of run you through something like that, if that, because it might take me a while. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, generally, it would be just trying to see where I've, that same feeling, where am I taking advantage of others, or, and it might not be that same person. A lot of times it can be like, oh, I've done these same behaviors with my kids, with that person at work, with, you know, whatever, and then looking to the self-seeking, selfish, dishonest, and afraid. But, you know, if you want help with it, we can talk about it later.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mary Lee. Amanda R., your turn.
Hi, this is Amanda R. from Maine, and I was wondering, what's your experience with sort of breathing some new life into that 11th step practice, where you had mentioned it being, it can become a box to check off. It can become very formal and not really listening to God. And I see that tendency, you know, come and go within myself, and it scares me. So any experience you have, I'm glad to hear.
Yeah. I like talking to other people about what they're doing, and also the meditation books, like switching that up, and if I'm like the style that I'm talking or writing to my higher power, I can, you know, even, it's just about like trying to stay in contact. So sometimes my meditation does look more like a traditional, you know, getting quiet, being peaceful. Other times it can be like, I'm going to do yoga. I'm going to, you know, it just, I'm going to take a walk in nature. Like, those things can all be incorporated into my getting connected to my higher power, because it's whatever works. Like, it does need to be that. Our 11th step, it's like the one step where they give us this broad range of like, talk to people and, you know, talk to a rabbi, talk to your church, like whatever, just get out there, just start doing it, talk to other people, see how they're doing it. Like, we're not given this, like, you have to read 84 through 88 and that's it. Like, no, just you're allowed to do whatever there. So if that was helpful.
Thank you, Amanda R. Michelle L.
Hi, Katie. This is Michelle. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi.
Okay. I was unmuting and I didn't hear if I was called on. Michelle in Delaware, thank you so much for your presentation this morning and sharing. I had two questions. thinking about relapse and coming back. One thing is I was just curious while you were out there, quote unquote, mm-hmm. out there, did people contact you? And if so, did you find it annoying or helpful, people in program? Because it sounds like you were pretty connected before you relapsed. And I struggle with that, with how much to reach out to people that I know are in relapse. So that was one question. And then my second is about your food. And if it's different this time around, and not with any, you don't have to get into any specifics, but if you're following the same food plan as before, or you've kind of either become
sure.
a little, yeah, where you're at with that. Thanks.
Sure. Thanks. So yeah, relapse and being out there, and occasionally people would check in, but I avoided you all like the plague. Like, it was so painful to even I didn't listen to A Vision for You. I went to my I went back to the meetings that used to really annoy me. That's what I did. And I I didn't completely leave OA. I was in touch with some people, but mostly people who were like, it's okay, you know, you like, and I don't know if it would have been better any other way, but I'm glad that there was somewhere to go. But no, like, as far as recovered people, I didn't return phone calls. It was no. And as far as my food, so yeah, I am no sugar, no flour, no caffeine or sweeteners. Those things just freak me out. And then I follow a food plan that a nutritionist gave me for my, height, weight, and activity. So that's how that went.
Thank you, Michelle L., for the question. Who else has a question this morning for Katie? Star 1 to unmute to identify yourself, please.
Dahlia B.
Is that Dahlia?
Yes.
Okay, Dahlia B. Who else?
Toby W.
Toby W.
This is Kevin.
Kevin, your first letter, your last initial of, you got it. First letter of your last name, Kevin, please.
F.
Oh, got it. Thank you.
Laura L. Angela P.
Roz R.
Roz R. Angela P. I missed somebody.
Tina Z, as in zebra.
Tina Z, okay. Anyone
Leslie
else?
Leslie M. Yes,
Devorah.
Leslie M.
Yeah, was there a Devorah in there?
Yes, Devorah L.
Okay, gotcha. All right, that's the list. Let's start with Dahlia B, and then we'll have Toby W. Go ahead, Dahlia.
Thank you. My question is about when you came back to program again, was there something you realized that you did wrong or not good enough or just mistakes in the way you worked your program the previous time? And did you do something different following such a revelation? And also, how was, if at all, what you did before in program helpful to you on your subsequent round? Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, so what I did before was helpful for me this next round. I mean, it was kind of like a returning to this truth that I knew. And like I said, I had all this guilt of like I threw it away. But once those things were cleared away, I was reunited. And as far as like a mistake or things that I did wrong, like what I can kind of see from the perspective afterwards here is like I was talking about, my ego really got in the way. The point of the steps is an ego reducing process. And if that part isn't happening and somehow it turns into an ego bolstering, oh, look at how many people I'm sponsoring. Oh, look at what I'm doing and spending all this time in meditation. Like that's not the process. It's not going to work. So ego reducing, and then also doing it every day. Like once that linked into my brain that I was doing this, that I was in charge of my own life, it also became, I don't really need to do that. I don't really need to follow this. I wasn't doing the program every day. Also, as I'm talking about, like, oh, I was sponsoring half of Pittsburgh, I didn't really have a recovered sponsor that I was doing those things with. So, yeah, that was another part. And I don't know if there was another question that I missed.
No, that was it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dahlia.
Thank you.
Toby W.
Hi there, this is Toby W., Food Addict. Thank you, Katie. I think you answered the question just now, because my question was about ego reducing, because I, after 4 years of abstinence, had a relapse, and it was because I was sponsoring so many people and forgot about taking care of me, and really felt I was doing it. So unless you want to add anything else, I really don't have anything else to any other question. And I really identified quite a bit with what you shared, and I thank you for your share.
Thank you, Toby.
Thank you very much. Kevin F., your turn. Kevin, star 1 to unmute.
Can you hear me?
I do.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. My question is, when you talked about when you first came in, you adopted the FAA food plan, which I believe is weighted and measured, no sugar, no flour, et cetera. And then you said when you came back, you talked to a nutritionist. Was there any real difference between that?
A little bit. The amounts that I was eating was increased just based on my age and inactivity. I am a pretty active person. Exercise for me is something that I need to do for my depression and to feel in my body. So I know some people, you know, they have issues with it and need to regulate it. But for me, exercise is, it's part of me living a healthy life. So.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. Devorah L., your turn.
Hi, Katie. Thank you so much for your qualification. I can really relate. My question is, I'm getting out of relapse. Thank God I had my abstinent breakfast today. And what has been happening with me is I have unfortunately been the product of a food poisoning situation where my nutritionist, with all good intentions, would recommend something and I would try it and then I would get a reaction. And unfortunately, once the poison, once the food is in me and I developed a reaction, neither of us knew I would be allergic to it, those cravings start.
and either something happens physiologically, maybe it drops my blood sugar, I get hypoglycemic, or whatever it is, those cravings come, and I just, I'm already doomed. And even when I make program calls, it's like after the calls are over and I hang up the phone, the cravings are still there. So that's one part of the question. And then the second part, so I wanted to see if you had any tips on that, just dealing with these cravings, especially sometimes when it's a situation when it's like I feel like I've been spiked and it's not like I willingly wanted any of this to happen, but I have a highly, highly sensitive body. And then the second question, when you're climbing out of these different situations, you know, one of my triggers is volume. So my stomach has, you know, been about to like burst with volume, not of sugar, but just of like, say, three absent meals that I ate together to whatever. I got hypoglycemic and I just wanted to eat till oblivion. What have you done in your disciplines to help you get out of that the next day, the day after, with those nagging feelings of wanting more volume, you know, with the stomach being all stretched and it going down, just to like what disciplines have you done to help carry you through? Thank you, and sorry for the long question.
Okay, thanks. So there have been times that I've like been inadvertently triggered, and I immediately go to my higher power. I'm just like, God, okay, like, didn't mean for this to happen. Like, please help me through this. Really just show me what to do. Help, whatever. Usually that involves drinking a lot of water and going for a walk. But, like, I just, there's not much I can do. Like, when I'm triggered like that, it's getting into action, you know, calling other people. I know that you're saying, like, you know, I call people and then I still feel it. It's in the beginning, like, whenever I'm coming out of relapse, that is what it feels like, this continual gnawing of, like, I'm going to get you, I'm going to get you. Like, that is what it feels like. And I have to work my butt off to do all of those other things. Those tools that are in the program, those disciplines, like, they are helpful to get me abstinent. They will not keep me abstinent. I can't develop an entire life program just out of those things, but they are helpful to get me abstinent and to help me work the steps. So doing them, like doing all those things that are suggested, you know, talking to our sponsors, reading, going to a meeting, listening to a meeting, whatever, all of those things. Those are things that we do whenever we feel triggered. And I can't, if it was me living my life like that for the rest of my life, I'd say forget it. There's no way. I'm not going to just deal with this forever. But that's not what happens, right? We, like, have that initial response. We do those things. And when we go through the steps, it's like it puts the fire out. It just, like, it puts it out. And we're able to live life freely. Like, that's what I didn't understand. I thought that my life was going to be me fighting this addiction for the rest of my life. And I knew. That's why I threw in the towel so early, especially before I even found recovery, just 16 to, you know, 28. It was just, I'm never going to make it. I know that maybe I won't pick up today or tomorrow or next week, but eventually I will. So I'm just going to pick up now. But that's not what happens. Like, in living this life, we don't want to. The urge isn't there. I'm not fighting the urge because the urge isn't there. So at first, just do those things to get closer to that point of working through the steps and eliminating it.
That's very helpful. Thank you so much, Katie.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Devora. Now, Angela P., your turn, star one to unmute.
Hey, thanks. This is Angela P. Katie, thanks so much. This is awesome. I have my question's around 10th step. So I'm really enjoying, like, I'm finding so much freedom in this 10th step. And I have two questions around it. One is, do you always write your 10 steps out, or do you sometimes just do them on the fly? And then my second question is, like, what I'm struggling with, I think, is the actions to take to, you know, really change, because I've got some of these character defects are just so entrenched that I don't know how I'm going to change, you know, or let them be removed. And so, you know, I'm curious, like, do you just get ideas for how to be different or act differently from other folks that you're working those 10 steps with? Or do you find, you know, is it just a slower process of awareness?
Awesome. Yeah. So with the 10 steps, what I do during the day is, you know, the first opportunity that I have, I usually do what I was talking about with that phone app that's called the OA Toolkit. You can do a spot check inventory in it. It's absolutely awesome. And, you know, then I'll either text that to someone. And most of the time, like, that takes it away. If it doesn't, then that's something, like, if it lingers around, I'm doing 10 steps, and it's still hanging out there, then I need to talk to another recovered person and help them see it differently. Like, help me see it differently. And, so that's usually how I work that. And sometimes if I cannot, you know, I'm working, I can't get to my phone, like, I will just try and run it through my head. Okay, like, I'm pissed at them for this reason. This is what it's, a lot of times what it's affecting in me, that helps. Like, okay, this is kind of like my ego. That's what I associate with self-esteem. Like, it's actually my ego and pride and, this is my ambition. It's affecting this. And when I'm going through those things, I'm seeing like, all right, it's not actually the situation. It's all these things that it's affecting in me. That helps. And then when I get to that other piece of like, how do I do this? A lot of times those can be hard to see in my head for whatever reason. Like, it's just, it's blocked in there. So it's always, I believe it's a lot more effective for me to put it in my phone or write it out. And then as far as like the character defects and not being able to change them, that's like that 6 and 7 step stuff where I recommend looking, Don C has a blog and he goes in depth about steps 6 and 7 and kind of working towards the opposite of what that would be. And when we're doing that in our 10 steps, it comes down to like, okay, I have this fear and I can't do anything about it. God, please show me what to be. And then I like kind of, okay, what is that? God would have me be courageous. God would have me be honest. God would have me be loving, kind, patient, tolerant. And then like, what does that real world look like right now in this scenario? And then I go do that, like whatever it is. I can't stop myself from doing a behavior. It's just like, with the food, don't eat. That never worked. I couldn't do it. But building a life of these other ways to live, that's my way out. Is like, it's addition, not trying to stop some other thing.
Awesome. Thank you. That really is awesome.
Thanks, Angela. Razar, your turn. Star one to unmute.
Can I be heard?
You yes. can be heard.
Thank
Sorry.
You. Thank you, Katie.
You.
Thank you, Katie, for your share. I'm Razar, Florida Recovered, and so grateful to have heard you today. I have a question that kind of just stuck in my head that I wanted to ask you. I heard you when you were talking about when you do 4 steps with people, you know, how in the beginning you work with them very intently, and then when you get to the action steps, you have some people that you talk to periodically and some people that you, you know, the maintenance people and then the people that are in the action steps, you do that a different way as opposed to the people who are, you know, in 1, 2, and 3. I'd just like to hear your process with that, if you don't mind sharing that.
Yeah, sure. So this is something I've been, you know, being a product of relapse, I've been through the steps many different ways. And, like, I actually think of it as an asset of, like, this was helpful when I did it this way, and that was helpful when I did it this way. This was something that was lacking when I went through, you know, and whatever. And I actually go through steps constantly, you know, even what I'm talking about, the living in 10, 11, and 12, I still go back and do, you know, the full 1 through 12 at least once a year. And so I've come to see that sponsoring, and I hope this will be helpful whenever I'm parenting, people are different and they don't all need a cookie cutter thing. After like talking to someone and kind of getting a sense of their personality, where they've been, what hasn't worked for them and what did, then I suggest we start, like, you know what, I'm going to send you these questions, or, and I have, like, various ones to pick from, and it's not everybody gets exactly this. It's like, okay, well, let's try this, and then we go forward, and it really seems to be dependent. People are different from the person.
Thank you.
Thanks, Roz. Katie, out of respect for you, we still have two people on our list to ask questions. You okay going over 10 o'clock?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. So let's go on to Leslie M., and then we'll hear from Tina Z. Leslie M., your turn.
Good morning. This is Leslie M., a recovered compulsive overeater in Long Island, New York. Thank you, Leah, for your service. And Katie S., thank you so much for your sharing. I have a question. You know, I'm never quite sure, you know, you were talking earlier about when people called you when you were in relapse. I'm never quite sure how to handle people that I've sponsored previously, call and check in, because I still feel like I'm their sponsor or guide, even though I know that I'm not. So if you could share, you know, perhaps how you do that, someone that you haven't spoken to in a while, or someone not necessarily in relapse, but just kind of you're not speaking anymore. I kind of find it hard to go from sponsor to friend.
Yeah.
If you could address that, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know if what I do is right or wrong, or if there is a right or wrong, but a lot of times when people drop off, I kind of just let them do their thing. I'm not chasing anyone. I'm not saying, like, oh, how you doing? You want to do this? You want to try that? Because I know that when I was there, I had no. And even if I would have, like, it just, I don't call a lot of people who I start working with, and then they stop calling. But as far as people that I've taken through who are recovered, a lot of times what we do is just, like, set up a time to check in, like, every week. How are things going? How is your sponsoring going? Anything with your 10 steps, you know, what's it looking like with this? And it's just a check-in, really. And these people are my friends. Like, it just becomes, like, yeah, it just becomes that way of, like, we are a network. And, but, yeah, if people... That's basically, I think, what you were asking about. Like, when people go into relapse, do you reach out? And, you know, I don't know if it's right or wrong. I go to what the big book says, and it says kind of to leave them alone. So.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie. And our final question for the morning comes from Tina Z.
Hi, Katie. This is Tina Z from New Jersey, and I have a question. Actually, I have two questions for you. One, you had said that when you relapse, you picked up other substances like nicotine, and that seems to be my problem as well. When I relapsed into the food first, and then I started smoking. And now I'm kind of like smoking like a fiend and binging like a fiend. So my question to you is, when you decided to get back into program, did you still have a nicotine problem, or had you put down the cigarettes first, or did you kind of put them down together, or was nicotine kind of like a substance that you could put down on your own, and food was really your primary addiction? And the second question I have is, how do you find that OA app? Do you go into the app store or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just OA Toolkit. The OA Toolkit.
Yeah, OA. Okay. And you can find that in the iPhone app store. Just put in
it's
OA
in both.
Toolkit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yep.
Okay.
It's in both.
Okay.
Apple and Android. Do we want to talk about nicotine off the line, Leah? I don't know. Is that, like, I tried to?
I would be willing to talk to you offline about that one, because that is, the two for me are really connected in some way. And
yeah.
I can. And if I could call you later and you want to discuss it with me, that's fine.
Absolutely, because, yeah, I mean, addiction is addiction, and I will absolutely talk to you about that and how it's a toughie.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm free from nicotine today. I could. Okay. There's no way that I could live with this and not be.
Yeah. Okay. I guess you'll be giving out your phone number later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Give me a call.
Fabulous. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Tina Z, and thanks to everybody who asked questions this morning. And, of course, thank you to our speaker, Katie S., for your generous service this morning and sharing your recovery with all of us. Much appreciated, Katie S. And let's close now from page 164, chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.